and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matthew Penny is in the building. Penny, how are you doing, man?
It is St. Patrick's Day in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm doing great. We have the NCAA tournament. It's not even around the corner. It's within mere hours, what we've been waiting for over a year. So life is good around these parts.
We love St. Patrick's Day in this household, particularly because it's when my wife and I started dating. It was on St. Patrick's Day.
What a natural love story of St. Patrick's Day, right?
Very important to note the importance of St. Patrick's Day in my life, certainly. So I had something I wanted to ask you about beforehand, before we like really dived into this. My brain is scattershot at the moment. I've got NBA trade deadline stuff. I interviewed Cade Cunningham for a piece earlier today. I did the mock draft for Tuesday. I had a couple things go live on Monday about Houston and about something else. I can't even remember. So I've had like six pieces run already this week. I might have to write about the PJ Tucker thing that just happened as we're recording. But Matt, I mean, how are things going on your end outside of the St. Patrick's Day life? I mean, I'd imagine that you can't really get into the St. Patrick's Day shenanigans, given the fact that you have a child. I know that you were watching your child earlier tonight.
I was watching my child. It's a little different. I did my best to pull up the scene from The Wire when they have the Irish funeral in the bar to get myself fired up. But, you know, you got to be locked in for the pod first. We'll celebrate after. But it's a lot different than going out in South Boston. And I don't think anyone's gone out for a long time. So when the restrictions are lifted, I think we'll get our fair share of celebrations in. But not quite yet.
Yeah, I'm interested to see like if there is a St. Patrick's Day vibe here in Australia. Like, I don't even know, to be honest.
Is it technically not St. Patrick's Day yet there?
Oh no, it's absolutely. Like, I think it's past St. Patrick's Day. I think it's the 18th.
So. Yeah, I can never keep up. Yeah. Your hours are always so funky. And your wife, then, you record on the day you started dating, is also a credit to her too.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, daylight savings just happened, so now we're like an hour past there, and I think like another daylight savings happens soon. I don't know, like I'm all thrown off in terms of time. Like, worst possible time for any of this to happen, like with the NCAA tournament and shit, because I just have no idea what time it is at any point right now.
Well, you plow through zombie mode, and you look at the tip times, even the first four. I mean, it's probably like 9 in the morning for you, but the last tip's like 9:57 tomorrow or today, whatever, this post of Michigan State UCLA. And you just know that it never starts on time. It's always like 20 minutes later. And you just got to lock in for a few weeks and get through it.
Oh, and like, here's the other thing too, like the NCAA tournament schedule, like, I mean, Virginia Tech Florida is the first game on Friday. I mean, I will have to wake up for that, I think, at 3 o'clock.
See, in the morning. Like, that's the downside. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will wake up for that 3 o'clock. Like, if it was, if they had done like a 1:16 game, because Drexel, Illinois is in that window, right? Like, if the first game was Drexel, Illinois, I wouldn't have woken up for that. But we've got Virginia Tech, Florida, Colgate, Arkansas, Utah State, Texas Tech in that first window. I probably will watch both of those, like all three of those games, to be honest.
Yeah, it's an early window, but it's still got to be exciting regardless of what coast or shoreline you're on. It's one of the exceptions where you got to wake up and do it.
So today on the show, we're going to talk about just early entrants real quick. We'll probably do like a recurring quick segment at the top on early entrants into the NBA draft. And then we're going to talk about some of the, like, Matt wanted to talk about some of the coaching changes, particularly Indiana, across college basketball. And then finally, the majority of this podcast is going to be about the NCAA tournament and doing a prospect preview for the NCAA tournament games that you have to watch. We're actually going to do that in terms of windows. So like the first window is Virginia Tech, Florida, Colgate, Arkansas, Drexel, Illinois, Utah State, Texas Tech here in the first round. I liked that idea to do it by windows because I figured it'd be a nice, easy way for people to follow the schedule of the tournament. And kind of know, like, hey, this is when these guys are playing. Plus, in addition, the pods play in the same window for the most part. So Hartford-Baylor plays in the same – or no, it's Colgate, Arkansas plays in the same window as like Utah, Texas Tech. No, they don't. That's a lie. Well, I don't know. I'm all fucked up. We'll figure it out. We might do it by region.
As long as you tell me by region, because like you said, windows. I'm like, I don't know how to do this by windows. So just yell out region while we're here. We'll make it work.
Yeah, scratch that. We're going to do it by region. I'm a fucking idiot.
We are back. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the first thing here we want to talk about is Isaiah Jackson declaring for the draft. So Isaiah Jackson has decided to declare for the draft, but test the waters first. And over at The Athletic, Kyle Tucker said he wants to be a lottery pick. I believe he tweeted that. Goodman has said he has not closed the door regarding returning to college. I'm intrigued by this. Like, it was one of those weird situations where when you talk to people outside of Kentucky throughout the year, they were like, oh yeah, I'm sure Isaiah is going to go. But then when you talk to people inside of Kentucky, it was more that they were not convinced that that was the case. So this kind of falls into them not being convinced that this is not the case. I will be very intrigued to see what Isaiah Jackson does. Like, this was I don't want to say it was like a full-on curveball, but it was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
It was like a changeup, I think, more than a curve.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about it, and he started off well. We kind of threw him in the mock really early on, then kind of returned back to the middle there, played 16 minutes against Notre Dame, played 15 minutes against North Carolina. This is back in December. And then he popped back up toward the end of the year. Six of his last seven games were in double figures. He looked, I mean, he's always athletic, but he's blocking more shots, running the floor a little bit more. There's different mock drafts that have him in that like 20 range. So I wasn't surprised that he declared and said to test the waters. I don't know if I'd say he's a lottery lock. And that would be a little bit bold for me, for my taste, but it'd be hard pressed to say he's going to get out of the 20s. I don't think I'm going crazy there. I mean, my only hesitation with him is he was 0-for-2 from three, and positionally, I mean, where do you put him? Is he a just athletic four that runs around and defends multiple spots? If he's a five, can he?
Oh no, he has to be a five. Has to be a five.
All right, then if we're going to stretch the four and be a five, then he's got to shoot some threes and be able to hit some shots, and we just haven't seen enough of that yet.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, if he's a four, like, he has to shoot. Like, if he's a five, right, you can at least run him as, like, a rim runner, right? I mean, if he's four, then then he really has to shoot. And that gets a bit concerning to me. You know, I feel like I was a little bit lower, like, on Isaiah throughout the year. I know that, like, ESPN has had him, like, right around the edge of the lottery the whole season. I think they have him, like, firmly in the lottery right now. I have him more around the 20 mark right now, kind of like what you said. I'd be surprised if he got out of the first round. Bigs just always have a wider window. I think he's firmly in the mix to be the second big drafted behind Evan Mobley. I would throw Usman Garuba. I would throw Kai Jones. I would throw Alperen Sengun. I would throw who's the last one I'm missing?
Among the Jar, maybe, like, later.
De'Ron Sharp, yeah, I think I would.
De'Ron Sharp, he's not going to be second, but I'm saying, like, you know, he's going to be in the mix a little bit.
I wouldn't be stunned if De'Ron Sharp was the second big taken, to be honest.
Ooh, I'd be, like, a little surprised.
I don't have him there, but I don't think I'd be, like, totally shocked if a team thinks that, like, oh, his passing and, like, ball handling ability and dexterity is what we want from a big. But in the case of Isaiah, early in the season, showcased all sorts of crazy athleticism. Middle of the season, didn't really take the growth that you expect in terms of, like, positional defense and in terms of being able to stay on the court without fouling a ton. Like, he fouled out of back-to-back games against UNC and Louisville, playing 15 and 21 minutes, right? Really had foul problems against Arkansas in that high up-tempo attack. I think he had four fouls in that game. He fouled out against Arkansas as well. Another high up-tempo, like, you know, tough teams to deal with, right? And he fouled out of three games late in the season as well. Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State. Having said that, he was really good in his last seven games, let's call it. Averaged 13.3 points, seven rebounds, two blocks, while also getting a steal per game and just, like, finishing all over the place. The reason that I think he's a five is he doesn't really shoot it right now. And then also, more than that, even doesn't have great feel. 18 to 38 assist to turnovers this year, so 1 to 2. not really a great decision maker with the ball. I think it's going to take time for him to like really figure out where his reads are. I think he's more of like a Clint Capella-y big than he is a like even a potential 4-5. I think he's like a pure five at the next level, and that's okay. You can be that, but those guys are just like, you know, 10% less valuable in today's NBA, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. And he's very slender, too. So if yep. we're saying he's a five, he's going to have to put on weight just because we've talked about it ad nauseum, the size and athleticism of NBA fives. And also to add what you're saying, he's playing 20, 25 minutes a game. He still had four fouls against Tennessee in 21 minutes and four fouls against Florida in 16 minutes. If you're going to be an energy guy off the bench, you don't want three or four quick fouls and putting guys in the free throw line either and like getting NBA bigs comfortable and some free points. How much yep. of this do you think, and I don't want to read too far crazy into this, is we talked about Kentucky's recruiting class a little bit, and Oscar Tshiebwe transferred from West Virginia. You have Damian Collins coming in. Is it going to be a logjam a little bit up front, too, where he's playing maybe 20 minutes? Even this better run here, he's playing 23 minutes, I think you said. Is this kind of like the best showcase stuff he's going to have? And going back, would he even, let's say he goes 20th. If he came back next year, like, I don't think he's going to end up 10th on a mock draft to start the year.
I mean, he might be, but I don't think that the financial value of going 10th in 2022 versus 20th in 2021 is better, because you get to free agency quicker by entering the draft in 2021, and you get the extra year of earning potential down the road. Like, I think that it's much more valuable to go 20th in 2021 than it is to go 10th. Like, if you can jump up to 4th or 5th, right? Or if you're Corey Kispert going from 38th to 11th, like, that's much more valuable. But I don't think that there's, like, an enormous difference here. Now, the question is, like, the real question is he ready? Like, is he emotionally, in terms of maturity, like, is he ready to deal with having to be a professional and have that mindset, having that, you know, ability to just go in and do the job that he has to do? That's what it comes down to me at the end of the day. If he can do that, then yeah, go. Like, I think that he should go. If not, I think it's a smart choice to maybe chill, sit back, think, and, you know, figure out, is it better for me to be in college for another year because I'm not ready, and I might kind of pigeonhole myself as a guy who is just not an NBA player at this point.
Yeah, I think he should probably go, because I don't think the feedback's going to be, all right, you're 35th. You go back next year, you're going to be 15th. Like, Corey Kispert has shot it so well for the whole time he was at Gonzaga, but even more so now with a better team, it's a bigger microscope. And sometimes when prospects have a bigger microscope, you start nitpicking stuff. With Corey Kispert, it was like the antithesis of that. It was like the opposite. It's like, oh, we've kind of like missed this for a while here. Isaiah Jackson, it'll start to be, well, can he shoot threes at all? He's a little bit slim here. His plus minus, and I don't have it in front of me, and we talked about this when Brandon Boston and Terrence Clark were still in the mix for top 10. Like, initially, Kentucky was better with him not on the floor. So the longer guys have to dig into that and poke holes in your game, the more likely you are to slide. In this draft, we've talked about how uncertain it is really after pick number 5. So a betting man, I'd say it's probably in his best interest to go if he gets enough feedback saying he's a first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, even, yeah, top 25, I think he should go. I know he wants lottery. If he gets top 20, I think it'd be surprising to return at the end of the day. And you mentioned the on-off numbers. By the end of the year, he was, like, by far Kentucky's biggest positive driver of play. Like, not even in question. They were 12 points better offensively and 9 points better defensively when he was on the court. They were 21 points per 100 possessions better when he was on the court than when he was off the court. For reference, that means they were 10 points better, 10.6 points better than their opposition when he was on the court, and they lost the minutes where he was off the court by 10.5 points per 100 possessions. So, and this all comes via Pivot Analysis, who is a really great, does a really great job tracking all of this on-off stuff. Yeah, by far their biggest driver of positive play. And I don't even know if he can do that next year. Like, I think he's a top 20 pick. in this upcoming NBA draft. I think he's going to end up being something similar to Clint Capella at the NBA level. I would happily take the time to develop him somewhere in the 15 to 25 range.
Yeah, 25. I mean, look, if it's Clint Capella, like we're celebrating here for an NBA team, if that's who he nets out at. I don't know if his ceiling's as high, and you'd have to shore up the fouls, make some threes, put on a little bit of weight, and show you can do more than just kind of like run and jump offensively.
Yeah. Okay, you wanted to talk a little bit about the Indiana job. Tell me why Brad Stevens is going to take the Indiana job.
St. Patrick's Day in Boston. Can we not talk about that? I looked for about 5 minutes in his contract, and I just like stopped. I had like three windows open. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, he's not going there. Like, if Brad Stevens left the Celtics, he could have his pick of 20 NBA jobs, unless there's some like pull to go back to the hometown. And I know Mark Titus has really played it up extensively about going to coach the Hoosiers. I just don't see it. And I'm not even saying this as like a Celtics fan. I'm just seeing as like an outsider looking at the job.
Yeah, I don't see it. If I was Stevens, I would rather stay in the NBA. But, you know, maybe there is that like intense home pool. I don't know. Like, I don't know Brad Stevens like that. You know what I mean? So who the fuck
unfortunately
knows?
I don't either. He's not coming over later to celebrate St. Patty's together. But it was more for me that I just loved, like, Indianapolis as a city has crafted this bubble, this total immersive experience, good, bad, and different, to make sure the NCAA tournament happens. Get guys in hotels, they're running around AAA ballparks, getting their daily exercise in. In Indiana, it just, like, crashes the party. And, like, hold on. Like, we're the biggest show in town. Archie Miller is fired, and we're going to hire somebody. So it was just like somebody showed up and crashed the thing. Like, you love those guys. You don't want to hear it now. I just saw it as how much it had to kill Indiana that the Big Ten really is like the talk of the town, the country, and they aren't even in the mix. You have Michigan and Illinois more or less split the Big 12 championship between the tournament and regular season. We can split hairs about win percentage like Brad Underwood and those guys did. Iowa has a national player year in Luka Garza. Ohio State and Illinois go to overtime, and I would say one of the best games of the year, in Indiana, in Lucas Oil Stadium, in your home state, in the Big Ten championship. Purdue has 18 wins. Wisconsin has 18 wins. Rutgers has had this program resurgence during the tournament. Even Michigan State figures out late, has a play in the game. Maryland's had their moments, and they're in the tournament. And now the rest of the league is Indiana, Penn State, Northwestern, Minnesota, and Nebraska. So including Indiana, three of those teams have fired their coach. And kind of as a Hoosier fan, you have to think you're still kind of miles away from the top of the pack right now.
Oh, and here's the other thing too. You brought up Purdue having 18 wins. That Purdue team next year is going to be top five in the country entering the year.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Like, agreed.
Jaden Ivey, Zach Edey, Trevion Williams, Mason Gillis, and who's the other? Brandon Newman's the other wing. Ethan Morton, shout out Pittsburgh. I think shout out Butler County.
There it is.
If I remember
Easter
correctly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, going to be an unbelievable team next year. Like, if I find 2022 odds as soon as the 2021 season ends and Purdue is anything over 20-1, I will probably bet them to win the title.
Well, you bet about four or five different teams, but yeah, that's a safe pick.
Hey, I think I've only got three, and one of them's already Alabama. Eliminated. I have Alabama 6-7-1. I have Gonzaga 9-1 preseason.
And Kentucky. No,
we're not gonna go into the third one.
Okay, I'm sure it's in the state of Kentucky. We'll put it that way. It's one of the two.
Yeah, it's just in that Lexington town. Okay. You know,
could have been the Louisville town.
No, it wasn't Louisville. Although I did like that Louisville team as well. That was a bad one. But all that matters is if I win Gonzaga 9-1. Then I still win, what is it, 7 units? Yeah, that's all that matters. We're good.
Oh, just a light 7. Okay. Well, we see this now, and I'm not against guys being bought out and paying exorbitant amounts of money, but with a $10 million buyout, and I'm sorry, philanthropic buyout, as the press release stated, to relieve Archie Miller of his duties, I just hope you have a plan. Like, we talked about Brad Stevens, and he said on Zolak and Bertrand the other day that he's happy, he's not going anywhere. We've seen things change, but I don't think so. Then you have names floated like Chris Beard and Scott Drew. Like, Chris Beard makes $4.6 million a year, is extended in 2019 with a 6-year contract through 2024-25. the deal at the time announced a $3 million buyout. Scott Drew makes roughly $3 million a year in Waco, where he's rebuilt the program, reimagined his recruiting philosophy, considered favorite in the Final Four. Like, are you leaving there? Like, Nate Oates' buyout is $12.5 million. So who's, like, the guy? You're paying $10 million to start over, which is okay, but, like, who's the guy?
Yeah, I mean, like, a good example of this is Iowa State, right? Like,
right. They had a plan. They knew.
They fired Steve Prohm, and they hired T.J. Otzelberger the next day. They knew that was the direction they were going to go. So if you're Indiana, you got to know, like, 1,000%. If you are going to find, like, you can't just go into this being like, oh, yeah, we're going to interview John Beilein, and then we're going to interview Chris Beard and Scott Drew, and, you know, we're going to try and seal Brad Stevens and Tony Bennett. And then if those guys work, we're going to throw our hands up because we don't know what our next options are. Right. Yeah,
Musbus, it just doesn't. Porter Mosier, yeah, like it's maybe they do, right? It's like maybe we're just idiots, like throwing out dumb ideas, and they have their name. It's already done. They're waiting 3 weeks, but it's similar to, you know, and Mick Cronin's done a great job at UCLA. What he's been able to do there quickly, but I remember that search was similar. It's like, okay, what about Tony Bennett? What about Jay Wright? What about? It's like, okay, so this didn't happen like beforehand.
Can we? By the way. I really need Brad Stevens to take this Indiana job because I need
he can take it. I think it's great for college basketball if he does. It's staying for the Celtics. He's an unbelievable coach. I know we've been up and down here this year. It would be great for college basketball if he goes back. I will at least admit that.
I need it for Titus to take just the most epic victory lap across the college basketball media folks. Do you remember that episode of South Park where Randy Marsh had to like put his balls like into a wheelbarrow? Like a
wheelbarrow, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that way too quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what this would be like. If
it's the Vince McMahon gif of him like doing that strut, kind of like Conor McGregor walking out of the curtain. It's just like that, and you can implant his face on him.
This is what I need in my life. If Brad Stevens takes the Indiana job. Please do something illogical, Brad Stevens. I need it. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to talk about the NCAA tournament here. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy Mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where Joy Mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Let's jump into this bracket. We're going to talk about the NBA prospects in this NCAA tournament. We're going to do a bit of a deep dive to an extent. I mean, we're not going to be on here for more than like 40 more minutes, I don't think. But we're going to do it by region. So we're going to start with Gonzaga. Gonzaga obviously has Jalen Suggs, Drew Timmy, Joel Ayayi, Corey Kispert. Those are the four. I think like maybe we can mention Andrew Nimhard just like on the kind of back burner here. I don't think he'll be going pro this year necessarily. They play Norfolk State or Appalachian State. They don't really have anyone. And then in the second round in their pod, it would be one of Oklahoma or Missouri. Oklahoma has Austin Reeves, who I think is like a pretty interesting prospect. They have Devion Harmon, who's not going to be able to play in these games because he has COVID. There's no one else really on Oklahoma that like strikes me as a potential NBA player this year. At Missouri, I'm partial to Drew Smith personally as their best prospect, but I know some people like Xavier Pinson a little bit more. Those are the two guys. Jeremiah Tillman, I don't really see him as an NBA prospect necessarily. Gets to the foul line a bunch. Super tough. Great offensive rebounder. Really good defender, but just not really an NBA player. Do you remember the Mark Smith thing, by the way, when he was coming out? Like, baseball player. People were so excited about him. He was like a baseball player who last second decided to play basketball in college, and there was like a big recruiting race between Illinois and Missouri for him.
Okay. What, 3 years ago? Or is it longer?
Three or four, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, Mark Smith, unfortunately not an NBA player.
remember him? Yeah, he's out. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
But do any of those guys stand out? Any of those guys you want to talk about? Any of the Gonzaga, Missouri, Oklahoma guys?
Don't necessarily stand out. You had a good tweet the other day that it seemingly, I think based by seed line, I would say that Gonzaga has, quote unquote, the easiest path, not an easy path, but I'm saying like the easiest path to get to the Final Four. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that that's right.
Yeah, so you'll have opportunities to kind of get into the bench a little bit and see probably less of Suggs and Kispert early, but I am kind of hopeful, anticipating, excited to see how they now react to, you're out of the West Coast Conference. They kind of had that late scare in the WCC championship game to BYU. They bounced back. Jalen Suggs was awesome late. It's like now you're going to have an even bigger target on your back. Jalen Suggs being discussed as potentially a top two pick. It's how much does that change your game now that really like the world is watching you and not just the college basketball nerds staying up way past their bedtime to catch a West Coast game?
Yeah, no question. In terms of the other two teams, I'll just bring up Austin Reeves. There are some NBA folks who think Austin Reeves is like pretty undervalued because they think he's going to shoot it at the next level. Over the last 2 years, he shot like 28% from three, but a lot of those, I think it's like 85% of his shots come off of pull-ups, and that's just not going to happen at the NBA level. At Wichita State in 2017, 2018, when he was there starting his career, he hit 51% from three his first year, 42.5% from three his second year, and he was in more of like a spot-up role. I think it was something like 55% of his shots, 60% of his shots came directly off the catch in those scenarios, and he was much better. So if you can find a way to kind of mesh the two things of his game, where he's become a really good creator and smart with ball in hand at 6'5", and then additionally can bring the shooting back from Wichita, that's like a pretty interesting second round pick, I think.
Interesting second round pick. I mean, you do have to look at the totals too. In each of Wichita State as a freshman, he only took 55 three pointers. His sophomore year, he took 127. This year, he's down to 98. I mean, the guy's not afraid of the moment. I mean, that game going back and forth was against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, he's back and forth with Cade.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like he wants to go back and forth, but it's like, how do you kind of put all that together and know that the usage is going to be so much lower and are you going to be able to defend? But I like him. He's tough. He rebounds. He passes the ball a little bit, and he wants the ball when the game's on the line too. I mean, he's had multiple games throughout the season where shot clock's winding down, scoreboard's winding down, and he wants to be the one that makes decisions.
Okay, next pod. Creighton, UCSB. Creighton has Marcus Zagorowski, Denzel Mahoney, Christian Bishop, anyone else that Mitch Ballack. I actually kind of like both more than Bishop and Mahoney. Damian Jefferson has gotten some like here and there publicity as well. I don't think like really, I think all of those guys should go back maybe Balak should leave, but I think everyone there should just go back to school. UCSB is interesting, kind of a high major transfer haven that Joe Pastrnak has kind of cultivated. Corey McLaughlin started his career at Oregon State before going to UCSB. Miles Norris started his career at Oregon. Devereaux Ramsey started his career at Nevada, but was like kind of a high level recruit at one point. The only guy that like is here that was not necessarily a super high level recruit who like makes a big impact for them is Amadou Sow. And he is their second best player behind McLaughlin. Even like Josh Pierre-Louis went to Temple. I don't really see any of these guys as NBA prospects to you. Maybe McLaughlin would be a summer league guy to me.
Yeah, I think you might have had Mitch Balak as like outside looking in your shooters column.
Yeah.
I made that up. I mean, he's a 40% shooter from three, and if he's clicking and playing well, they're winning when he gets going, and he can pull up off a movement, and they're especially dangerous that way. I remember watching the Seton Hall game early in the year where he, like, backbreakingly pulled up from, like, half court in the flow of the offense and covered the game, like, late, and I couldn't believe what was happening. He's only 4 of 19 in the Big East tournament from three, but if Creighton goes, it's kind of like, by the way, if Mitch, I've always liked Marcus Zagorowski's game, tough, smaller, gritty guard. We'll be reminded a lot that he's a brother of Orlando Magic guard Michael Carter Williams. Probably not anywhere we need to really dive into deeply. But the fun Creighton nugget is, have you seen the Warren Buffett office pool?
No.
So billionaire Warren Buffett owns Berkshire Hathaway. His office pool gives $100,000 to the employee with the most wins before a loss. $1 million if you get all first round games right. $1 million a year for life if you get the first and second round right. Why I mention this now is because Warren Buffett's hometown is Omaha, Nebraska, home of Creighton, and he has announced if Creighton reaches the Final Four, all those prizes will double.
Oh, I love it. Good for Warren Buffett.
Yeah, so, we gotta find a way to consult for them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's UCSB, our dream.
Yeah, that's the next sponsor. UCSB, like you said it, it's kind of like this transfer U model for success. Corey McLaughlin, 53% of the field, 44 from three, 90% from the free throw line, averaging 17 points per game. I've liked Corey for a long time. He came to Reebok camp back in like 2015, so he's been in college for a while. Miles Norris, former national top 75 recruit, also went to Brewster Academy. Stretch 4-5, ability to shoot from three. I'm not really there as a pro guy, but like you said, Joe Pastrnak has done a fantastic job there. He's 88-33 in 4 years. Never finished worse than tied for second in the league.
Let's go to Virginia, Ohio. Virginia has Sam Hauser, Trey Murphy as your like super lights out shooter guys. Jay Huff is a really, really good rim protector who can also step away and knock down 40% from three. And right now, that's about all they have. Like, you could sell me on Casey Morsell long term, maybe. You could maybe sell me on Reese Beekman way down the road. Maybe way down the road on Jabri Abdur-Rahim. I think that more than anything, though, it's the three guys: Trey Murphy, Jay Huff, Sam Hauser. Murphy, by far, the most interesting guy there. Against Ohio, though, I don't think they're going to have the best player on the court, because Jason Preston is going to be the best player on the court in this game. And he has been unbelievable this season. 59 true shooting percentage, 38 assist rate, 40% from three. I think he's averaging 17, 8, and 8. Just all around a really, really good point guard at 6'4", who's going to cause a lot of problems for Kia Clark, I think, due to his size. Anyone else, anyone in that game that you really want to talk about here is being interesting?
Yeah, we talked about Trey Murphy a little bit at the end of the last one, but he's kind of entered the chat of NBA draft conversations, and intriguing. I mean, the shots there, you want him to be a little bit more aggressive. We don't know how Virginia's going to kind of come out and play, because they're not even getting there until Friday. They practice Friday morning in Charlottesville because of some quarantine and COVID issues, so the conditioning thing may play a factor in this too, and they want to slow it down. I mean, they're ranked 357th out of 357 teams in adjusted tempo, which is possessions per 40, and Ohio ranks 29th in adjusted offensive efficiency, which is points scored per 100. Like you said, a lot of it is because of Preston, dynamic point guard. I like his flair. Sometimes can be a little bit too much. 59% from the free throw line is kind of weird, considering shooting 41% from three. Loves that pick and roll, be able to play with the defender, what he gives him. From an NBA perspective, you're kind of still on board with just a little slow and kind of relies on his hesitations. I like his size. Like you said, it'll be a problem for Clark, but he needs to tighten his handle a little bit and be able to knock down his free throws.
Yeah, in that vein, too, the Clark matchup will be interesting because Clark really will get into his handle for sure, which could cause problems for Preston. I think the size is just going to be a little bit too much. Yeah, this is a big moment for a couple guys. I think the two guys that I'm really interested in are Preston and Trey Murphy, because I think if both of those guys have really big NCAA tournaments, I mean, you could see them easily skyrocket into top 40 status in this draft, and like, gotta go at that point for both of those guys, juniors. You know, in the case of Trey Murphy, I believe he's a fourth year guy. Trey Murphy, ridiculous shooter at 6'9", has some real pop off of 2 feet as a cutter. Really efficient finisher. Okay defensively, not like a great defender by Virginia standards necessarily. Preston, on the other hand, just super, super high level feel for the game, ought to skyrocket in terms of upward trajectory still going forward. If either of these guys make the Sweet 16 and they do it and their teams do it on their back, you're going to see a big push for both of those guys come draft in draft circles, I think.
Yeah. And when you kind of look at the pod too, I mean, we're a little shaky on Creighton and UCSB. You win that game and maybe there's an upset. Like, you can sneak into the Sweet 16 and play potentially Gonzaga. Trey Murphy, the defense will get better. He's outwardly said, like, I've never really played defense. And yeah, now he is. You have to play defense to play at Virginia. And with Preston, we've talked about his story. He was as close to being a regular college student at UCF as he is to being an NBA draft pick. So it's an incredible movement that he's had the last few years. And this is just another like insane chapter that doesn't make a lot of sense. So rooting for both of those guys.
Okay. Next up, we've got USC, Wichita State, Drake, and then Kansas and Eastern Washington. So USC has Evan Mobley, obviously. They also have Isaiah Mobley. I'm not super interested in any of their other guys. Like, if I have to watch Drew Peterson take pull-up mid-range jumpers anymore, it's going to make my head explode. Ethan Anderson is...
I wake up to at 2:30 in the morning from you, too. Like, are they going to throw it to Evan Mobley to end the game, or am I just going to, like, go crazy here?
Yeah. Ethan Anderson's like a really good college guard who has been injured a little bit this year. I want to see how he develops. He has a chance long term, maybe, but not there yet. Wichita State has a kid named Ricky Council that I'm like super interested in. Should not go pro at all this year, period. Very interesting long term at 6'6" with like super long arms and very bouncy. Tyson Etienne is their best player. He's a 6'2". I would call him their point guard more than Al-Tariq Gilbert. Gilbert's been more of like a scorer, it feels like, when he's been on the court to me this year, whereas Etienne's like kind of running the offense. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, and Tyson Etienne, also a player that you're in the conference, I believe, too.
Yeah, like, I know that Gilbert has like the higher assist rate, but it just feels like in their big moments, like, it's always Etienne that they want the ball in the hands of. So, you know, Etienne, 40% from three, good decision maker, 2-to-1 assist rate to turnover rate, good defender, just kind of a smaller guy. Dexter Dennis, you know, had potential at one point. I think he still is, you know, maybe at some point a guy. For Drake, Roman Penn is out for the year. He was their point guard, like really kind of did everything in the backcourt for them. Since then, Joseph Yusufu has really stepped up, 38% shooter from three, really good scorer. Their best prospect, though, is Shanquan Hemphill, who's coming off of a foot injury. And, you know, 6'6" wing, doesn't shoot threes, but a good scorer, good rebounder. Just kind of athletic guy that does everything for them as a creator. I don't see anything here in terms of prospects for this year on either Kansas or Wichita State. Maybe you could convince me Etienne leaves, but I'm not quite there. On Kansas, Jalen Wilson is out due to COVID, So he is just not there. So we're not going to spend much time on him. Marcus Garrett is the most interesting prospect in this game to me. Just an elite level defender who continues to lead that team and be the most important player on it. I'm not a David McCormick guy. I understand that he scores a lot in college, but I don't love what he does as like a college basketball player in general. Christian Brown is like semi-interesting to me just because he's a good shooter, but he's been very inconsistent as a shooter this year. And then Oshai Ogbaji is just like a no-feel guy for me. I've never really been a fan of his game in general. On Eastern Washington, Tanner Groves is a big guy who can step away and shoot a little bit. I was pretty interested in Jacob Davison coming into the year, but he's like is just not like really in there. He's been like in and out of their games over the last little while and has not been as successful as he was last year when he was one of the best players in the Big Sky. Any exciting things there among that pod?
Ooh, yeah, I was wondering there. I had actually a coach tell me that they thought Davidson was going to be player of the year in the preseason. So you're right. It is kind of ebbed and flowed back. USC, Mobley was really good in the Pac-12 tournament. He put up big numbers, and he was great in the short roll. He was aggressive in the lane. When he caught, he would look opposite. Just really good fluidity when he was getting to his moves. There's like this fight a little bit, I think, for spots 2 to 5 in the draft. I think you tweeted or was on The Athletic, like 12 of the 14 potential lottery picks are playing in the tournament. Is that right?
I didn't tweet that, but I think that
I saw it somewhere. I'm not trying to plagiarize, but it's like that's rare. I don't know if it's rare, but it seems like it is in the last few years. So you're actually going to get a decent set of games for guys, and you want to see, okay, is he going to be aggressive from the jump and block shots and rim run? And he had one play, I think it was in the second round of the Pac-12 tournament, where he faced up, went left, and dunked with his left. And it's like, that's different. Yeah. Not a lot of guys are able to do that there. Kansas, I think David McCormick's getting there late, if I'm not mistaken, too. I think he might have had some contact tracing thing, so I don't even know how much he'll necessarily play. Wichita State, Ricky Council, intriguing to me, too. Played on our circuit with Team Felton. And he was a guy, I believe he signed late too. I'd have to look that up when they had, whatever it was, 6 transfers before the season started. I was advocating for him with a couple of the colleges. They didn't pull the trigger, and Wichita State took him, and it's clearly panned out. So those are the kind of guys I'd say I have my eyes on more than most.
Oregon VCU and Iowa Grand Canyon in the next pod. Oregon VCU is one of the absolute best prospects of the first round. It's going to be Chris Duarte against Bones Highland. I could not be more pumped for that game. I think it's going to be incredible. If you're going to watch like a 7-10 game, that's the one to me. Like, I know that James Booknight's in the 7-10 games. I know that Florida, Virginia Tech both have some somewhat interesting prospects, but Duarte versus Bones, probably directly matching up on each other, going to be an absolute blast to watch. Oregon has a couple interesting guys, Eugene Omoruyi, LJ Figueroa as well. I'm not really into Folly Dante guy. VCU has Hassan Ward, who is one of the most interesting defenders in the country to me. 6'9", 7'4", wingspan, moves like a wing, really good rim protector. Watch him in this game. Is like a potential weird pop-up prospect long-term. Iowa has Luca Garza and Joe Wieskamp as the two prospects that I'm particularly interested in. Grand Canyon has Asbjorn Midgard and Alessandro Lever in their front court. Actually, weirdly, one of the few mid-major teams that can match up with Iowa in the front court. So I'm a weird little matchup there. Like, I think that Iowa wins and doesn't really have a ton of issues, but if you told me there was like a weird 2-15 game, this one and the Ohio State Oral Roberts game that we'll talk about, those are the two that kind of are interesting to me.
Yeah, Oregon VCU is the game I'm looking forward to the most. Chris Duarte, shooter for Oregon, shooting 43% from three on 135 attempts, coming off being named third team All-American. And then, yeah, Bones Highland on VCU. They lost the A-10 championship game to St. Bonaventure. Just to kind of give a snapshot of who Bones is, he was scoreless in the first half of that game. He sat for the last 12 minutes with 3 fouls. And the kind of instant offense he can be, and I sort of envision for the next level, He rattled off 21 points in the second half. He's averaging 20 points per game, 19.5 points per game, 44% for the field, 37 from three. Slippery in the lane, likes to pull up off the bounce, can get hot really quickly. Hassan Ward also, like you mentioned, came on late. He played high school basketball in Springfield, Mass, down the road here. He played the spring of his senior year on our Under Armour circuit with NE6, was considering prep school. He's played 24 more minutes every game since January 30th and really made his presence felt in that rotation. Can be a difference maker on the boards or quick duck-ins, lobs, those type of plays.
The second round matchup there will be interesting regardless, because assuming that Iowa gets through, because then we're talking good guards against Iowa, which I'm fascinated by in a number of respects. I think if it's VCU, Luka Garza would cause problems for Hassan Ward.
Right.
But
and Oregon has good bigs, like you said. Like they have the size to physically match up with Garza. I mean, Garza might be a little bit more skilled of a scorer, but you have those guys and Wieskamp and Duarte going up. Like, that would be another good prospect matchup.
All right, down to the East region. Michigan is really interesting because Isaiah Livers it seems going to be out for a little while here, right? We're not entirely sure, right? Like, how big of a injury that is.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. It's a stress fracture, if I'm not. I think that's right. Yeah.
But Franz Wagner is a potential lottery pick. Definitely a guy to pay attention to. Hunter Dickinson is a fascinating 7'1" throwback to like another era, essentially. Like, would be a first round pick in 1995 for sure, coming out this year.
Yeah, right.
But it's just not going to be that. Might not be drafted this year. the way that the league has gone, I think he should probably go back. Not really anyone else I'm super interested in on Michigan right now. They play one of Mount St. Mary's or Texas Southern. I'm not going to lie to you, I've not seen Mount St. Mary's this year. I have seen Texas Southern play a couple times. They have Michael Weathers, who started his career, I believe, at Miami of Ohio and then transferred to Oklahoma State, got kicked out, and then went to Texas Southern.
Well-traveled, yes.
Well-traveled, good player, just well-traveled.
Talented, yes.
Yeah. The interesting game in that pod is LSU St. Bonaventure. This is, if not my favorite first round game, definitely in the top five. Cam Thomas, potential first round pick. Trenton Watford, potential draft pick. Javonte Smart, who I still don't love, turns the ball over too much. I weirdly still don't buy the shooting, even though I feel like everything from this year says I should buy the shooting. But I don't. I actually like Darius Days quite a bit more than him as a prospect. Are you a Darius Days guy by chance?
Not really. I mean, I know he averages 12-8, and he struggled. He was only 1-for-6 in the SEC championship game, but they need him for some production value to get going. I mean, I think stylistically he fits a little bit with modern NBA stuff, but I don't think it's necessarily there right now.
Yeah. And then the two guys on Bonaventure that really interest me are Osun Osuniyi, who won the A-10 Defensive Player of the Year award, just a ridiculous shot blocker, finishes. And then Kyle Lofton is a really underrated guard who plays their entire fucking game. And then, like, just has to make plays. Like, a weird fit for the NBA because he's not really quite a shooter, not like a hyper-elite decision maker, but he's just kind of a gamer and makes it work.
Yeah, for LSU, I mean, you obviously nailed it. Cam Thomas and Trenton Watford are the names to track. Thomas averaging 23 points per game. His percentages have dropped since the beginning of the year, but he's still 41% from the field and 32% from three. He's a volume guy. He's taken 16 or more shots every game since January 16th. He's had 21 or more points in 11 of his last 13. While I do say that, I do think he's been picking his spots a little bit better. In that Alabama game, he had a nice job zeroing in on Trenton Watford. They can have a two-man game going back and forth. Watford's really good, feasting on guys with lack of size. He can back it down, kick it out to Cam, kick it back out to Javonte. They had that play under a minute left. They ended up losing, but they gave him the edge at the time. Then Cam Thomas came down the next play and saw him on a drive and cutting Watford. So they play off each other. Watford is an interesting one to me. 6'9 forward, averaging 17-7. He had 30-8 in that loss to Alabama. Really had it going for a while. Likes to trail the play, make some isolation drives, reads. Could see him as a possible like Malachi effect type candidate. I think he could maybe test the waters based on what we've kind of heard. And Javonte Smart, yeah, he's the steady hand, but I don't necessarily view him as a NBA guy. Not really a true point guard. Averages 3 turnovers a game. The Bonnies won. They're just really good. I mean, they're 16-4 yeah. the year. They knocked off VCU in the A-10 championship game. And also, like, I'm not saying they're going to be Dayton because, like, Dayton was, like, a real national champion contender last year, but they don't have a senior on their roster.
Yeah.
And, like, they have five guys in double figures. Lofton averages 15-5-4. 25% from three, which is kind of crazy. He's only taken 70 this year, so the percentages can rise and fall with a single make. But he's confident. I mean, despite that percentage, he went 4-for-5 in the A-10 championship game while racking up 23 points. Can play both guard spots. I don't know if the NBA fits there, but a great college player. And him and Osen, both products of Putnam Science Academy.
Can we just note here as well, Mark Schmidt is a fucking genius. And do you want to take this time to, as a Bostoner, discuss Boston College's decision to not hire Mark Schmidt?
Do I want to take this time? I'll just say he was a BC alum. He was passed over. He'll be a hot story where he kind of fits in the coach's carousel. What, like only in New York, we played there, St. Bonaventure, when I was at UMass. I feel like I would say like an idiot, but it's not like the best place on earth, and what he's been able to do there and recruit there and win there like really is incredible, and he is a fantastic coach.
Yeah, it's no disrespect to Earl Grant, but it's pretty staggering to me to not hire Mark Schmidt to that job. That maybe I'll just leave it at that.
I'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
I'm 10 minutes from BC. We got to play all our angles here.
Next up, we've got Colorado, Georgetown, and Florida State, UNC, Greensboro. Colorado has McKinley Wright. You mentioned Deshaun Schwartz to me as someone that was interesting before we were recording. I get it. His knockdown 37% from three this year, but not really enough of an athlete. Long term, I really like Jabari Walker on that team. 63 yeah, true like, shooting percentage yeah. as a freshman, 6'8", 47% from three, like real long. I want to see what he develops as athletically as he continues to work his way into his body. Additionally, I also want to bring up Tristan Da Silva, who is Oscar Da Silva's brother from Germany. I think long term he's going to be pretty interesting as well. Again, not really a guy that plays a ton. Maybe you could sell me Jariah Horn. Maybe you could sell me Eli Parkette. I don't love either of those guys for the NBA game, but they strike me as really, really good college players that maybe if they come back, continue to, you know, rise and do what they can. But I think Horn has been in college, it feels like, for 5 years now.
Five different schools, yeah.
Yeah, so I would think that he's probably going to go and play pro overseas next year. Georgetown, I'll be honest, like, I don't really love any of the prospects on this Georgetown team. Like, I've heard some Cutis Wahab stuff. I don't really get that. Javon Blair is just like kind of your run-of-the-mill 6'4 guard. Chudie Bile, 6'7 and can shoot a little bit. Jamarco Pickett, 6'9 and can shoot a little bit. Donald Carey, 6'5 and can shoot a little bit. Like, that's kind of what you got with this Georgetown team, just a bunch of guys that are between 6'4 and 6'9 and can shoot a little bit.
Yeah, and they were 13-12 on the year, so they cracked 500 by winning the Big East tournament championship at Madison Square Garden, and Patrick Ewing was berated by MSG officials for not wearing his credentials, so hopefully in the bubble they recognize him there a little bit. They seem a little bit, I don't want to say team of destiny, but like they beat Creighton handily. It was 73-48. That really wasn't like even a game.
Beat down.
And in a funky season too. I mean, Dante Harris, I think, was tournament MVP, and Dante played on our circuit with Bobby Mays, and he didn't have a high major offer, and they took a chance on him, and he was very good down the stretch. Circling back for a second to Colorado, I don't know how much of an impact Jabari Walker will have, but I echo what you're saying. Son of former NBA player Samaki Walker, he went to Arizona Compass Academy, and he signed in April. Like, he was kind of like plodding through a little bit of mid-major stuff, and guys didn't want to take a chance, but I just remember watching him play and saying he could shoot and stretch the floor, doing a little bit, and maybe just a tuck-away name for a few years down the road.
Yeah, maybe even next year, to be honest, like, for real. If we're going to be honest about that, like, he might be ready next year. Florida State is Scotty Barnes, obviously, you know, super high-level prospect. We've talked a lot about Scotty on the show. I don't know that we need to, like, dive deep. MJ Walker is, like, a 24-year-old senior who's really started to shoot it for Florida State. I'll be honest, I'm like kind of interested there. Florida State. Who else am I missing? Raekwon Gray. I think Raekwon Gray is like a legit top 60 prospect in this class. I don't know what he's going to do. 6'8", 255 pounds, something like that. Super high level defender. Can really guard one through, or maybe let's say two through five. I don't think he's guarding ones necessarily, but draws fouls. You know, has improved as a free throw shooter a lot, finishes at the basket, just kind of does it all for them. They have some other guys that are long-term interesting. Anthony Polite is a 6'6" shooter who hit 44% from three this year. Malik Osborne, 6'9", can shoot a little bit and step away. Balsha Koprivica, bigger 7'1" kid that at one point was like a top five recruit in his class, who kind of slowed down but is now really starting to develop a bit more. Serdar Calhoun was a top three JUCO player in his class last year, right?
Yeah, both true.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me if he was really good next year. Like, I actually think he might be like one of their guys next year. On the other side, UNC Greensboro is Isaiah Miller, who has a shot to end up being like a bottom end of the top 100 guy for me. One of the absolute best athletes in college basketball. Like, he is going to try to throw down some unbelievable dunk in this game. Florida State might be a little too big for him to succeed, but he's going to do something really, really fun. And I think he's going to be a summer league guy for sure.
Yeah, I am interested to see kind of Scotty Barnes, and is he going to continue to play within himself, or does he have the draft whispers in his ear? And look, you're 6-10. If you have a good game here, score a few more points, maybe move up. I'm curious if he gets to that earlier moves in the paint and elbow attacks, and not so much as from the top of the key and pick and roll stuff. MJ Walker has been their best offensive player statistically. Just need him to not get too excited and also have him play within himself. Raekwon Gray, he's gotten more buzz lately. It's kind of like this, it's hard to say small ball style five because of his size, but he's wide and strong, does have good feet, very good in one-on-one situations, won't try to do too much. I love Isaiah Miller. I'm late to this party. I didn't watch much UNC Greensboro until they kind of made their run here. He's 6 foot tall and averaging 20 points per game and a walking highlight reel. I mean, it doesn't matter if people are in the lane. It's not like here comes a fast break. Like, he's going to try to dunk if like a defender rotates and steps up and will throw his body in. Yeah. 7 rebounds a game. He had 26, 12, and 6 in championship game versus Mercer. Loves the pick and roll. Can go either way with either hand. Hits short little fadeaways. Plays bigger than he is. I'm very excited to see how he adjusts to the 9 guys Florida State's going to throw out there who are 6'9" with 7'9" wingspans.
The next little pod here is BYU, UCLA, Michigan State, and then Texas and Abilene Christian. So BYU does not really have a ton of guys I'm super interested in. Barcelo hit 48% from three this year. Caleb Lohner is maybe their most interesting long-term prospect, a really good rebounder who can step out and shoot a little bit, but not really like an NBA guy. Matt Harms, people will be familiar with from his hair flipping days at Purdue. Elite level rim protector, won the WCC Defensive Player of the Year this year, but just not really an offensive threat in any way. They will be playing one of Michigan State or UCLA. Michigan State has Aaron Henry, who I believe is a potential first round pick. We talked about Henry quite a bit on the last two podcasts, so I don't know if we want to like dive super deep into him necessarily. Gabe Brown is interesting to me. Like, I didn't think he was a legit 6'8", but I've heard from people now telling me like he's legitimately that big, and he shoots 43% from three. That's always going to get you looks. Joey Hauser just has not had the kind of year that we thought Hauser was going to have. Going against them, Josh Langford's just had a ton of injury issues. He's been a little bit better later this year. Marcus Bingham has a lot of tools, but has not put together any of those tools yet. UCLA is Johnny Juzang being a hyper elite shooter who has not really knocked down shots thus far in his career at the level commensurate with what we expected. Is he their best prospect? I think he is, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. Jaime Jaquez, you could say, 38% from three.
Shoots it, yeah.
Kind of does a little bit of everything for UCLA, like pseudo post up. You know, great get for UCLA. Like, I think will probably be like a third team All-American by the time he's a senior. but not a not like a pro-laden roster, weirdly.
No, but Tyre Campbell's been really good, and he was another kid ranked really highly as like a middle school player and tapered off a little bit, and he committed a few places, decommitted, ends up UCLA, and some people have written him off, but he's been good there. I mean, he's led them through injuries this season and guided them to the tournament, really.
Yeah. Going to Texas real quick. Texas has Greg Brown and Kai Jones, obviously, both of whom have a real shot to go in the first round. What do we think of Kai Jones' finish to the year? I don't really know what to make of it. Do you?
I thought you were going to ask for Greg Brown's finish to the year. No, I don't know what to make of it either. I think Kai's still just like the flashes guy. Like when he had that possession, I think last game, taking off the rim, going coast to coast and finishing. And then I think he hit a three at the top of the key, like three possessions later, maybe less. And I just like, man, if he does that every year, like we're really every game, I'm sorry, we're talking legitimate top 10 guy. He might be top 10 guy anyway, because people hope that they can get there.
Greg Brown, weird finish to the year. Like Greg Brown is not one of their five best players right now.
No, I mean, I think he played 6 minutes in that championship game. He had like the blow up at the end of the game before, and a reporter asked Shaka Smart, you know, they think he benched him to start the game, said, is it to do with that? He said, yes, we have expectations here. Like it does have to do with that. They won without him. So you're right. I mean, Kai and Greg weren't even really playing down the stretch for a lot of games, but now I want to see kind of what the rotation looks like in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Brown, 19 minutes combined in his last two games because of that little blow up. That's not a great sign going into the NCAA tournament. I hope that he figures it out. The two guys that Texas should be excited about are Matt Coleman and Jericho Sims. Have you heard some of the Jericho Sims excitement? We're starting to jump back on the Jericho Sims NBA player train, from what I gather.
How heavy? How heavy are the train, are we? I mean, look, big
two-way
ball,
guy?
Strong. Two-way means he's drafted what, like 46?
46 to 60, maybe undrafted, do a two-way?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he's definitely been better toward the end of the year, and we're talking about two NBA bigs, potentially, and Brown and Jones, and he's definitely the most consistent of the three. I haven't heard the build, the buzz as much, but it's hard to kind of look back the production that he's had lately.
And he's one of the best defensive bigs in the country. Like, that's the main thing.
Yeah, he's big and strong. I mean, every game they want to show the before and after pic of how much time he put in the weight room. Like, we get it. He's enormous.
And then the other guy is Matt Coleman. Matt Coleman has been so good this year. I'm going to be annoyed when he's not, like, a third-team All-American, to be honest. I don't know if... was he on the AP's third team All-American team? I didn't see.
I'm not sure. I think Cameron Krutwig was. I don't know who Matt Coleman was.
Oh, God. Matt Coleman's really good. 39% from three this year. 61 true shooting percentage. Really good, just steady, solid point guard. Does everything that you could possibly ask from him. Really profiles nicely as a third point guard at the next level, I think. Going to have every opportunity to be that guy. Abilene Christian does not really have any guys I'm interested in as NBA players. They play like super hyper aggressive defensively and then post up stuff on offense for their big 7 foot white guy, Colton Cole. Three guys under 6 foot that they start, if I remember correctly. Just not really like a pro roster, but that speaks exceptionally highly of what Joe Golding has been able to build. Just a ridiculously good, really, really good coach.
Yeah, no, you're right. The Coleman thing too, he's such an alpha. Like, he lives and dies with every play, and he stomps his feet, and he dictates kind of how Texas goes and pulls those guys in.
Okay, Connecticut, James Booknight is the guy, obviously. We talked a good deal about Booknight last week on the show, so I don't know that we're going to dive deep into him here necessarily. I'm also like sneaky in on Tyrese Martin and Isaiah Whaley as being like 10% interesting. And then Adama Sinogo is a long-term guy there that I want to pay attention to. At Maryland, we've got Dante Scott. We've got Aaron Wiggins, both of whom are on my top 100 board. Eric Ayala is just a really good college guard. I've heard like maybe a couple of people get excited about Daryl Morcel because of the defense. I'm not really there. The matchups here to me that are going to be exciting are Dante Scott and Aaron Wiggins going against Tyrese Martin and Isaiah Whaley. I would imagine that those that's kind of the crew that gets matched up against each other in this game. And then Daryl Morsell against James Bouknight is the one that's going to get just ridiculous headlines, because this is a fascinating showcase for Bouknight.
As it should. I mean, Booknight's ascended draft boards and subsequently struggled in the Big East tournament. He's a combined 8 for 25. He's 0 for 7 from 3, which is one of the things we talked about he's got to be able to do better at. He had some cramps, and Danny Hurley called him overly dramatic, which I loved. He's going to have his hands full with Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year Daryl Morsell. He's 6'5". He's tough. He's going to have to earn his points. That's the type of defender that will lock in on you every night in the NBA. And Bouknight, with his size, is he going to be able to withstand the physical nature that Morsell will bring, regardless of the guys who listed in RJ Cole, Isaiah Whaley? Like, the Husky's going to go as Bouknight does. Aaron Wiggins, probably the most intriguing draft guy for me on Maryland draft boards to kind of start the year. Then didn't quite meet expectations, was a 41% three-point shooter from three as a freshman, and now he's about 33% at the same volume. But he has been the biggest piece for the Terps since the new year, bumped up his points to about 14 a game. Dontus Scott, probably a couple years away, 6'7", forward, shoots 50% of the field, 43% from three, averages 11-6, in game shape, want him to get a little bit more toned up as we go forward here. I like Maryland starting five. UConn gets to their bench, it could get a little interesting.
Okay, then we've got Alabama and Iona. I have not watched Iona before the Rick Pitino apocalypse of him making the NCAA tournament. I saw Sante Gist and Isaiah Ross. I'm not going to be able to break them down in terms of how great they are as prospects. I didn't see anyone upon first glance that I was like, oh my god, this guy's an NBA player. Alabama has John Petty, Herb Jones, Javon Quinterly kind of coming on a little bit. Was the SEC MVP of the tournament. Josh Primo's the long-term guy there, but doesn't play quite as big of a role. You can maybe sell me on Jaden Shackelford. Just a bunch of really, really good college players that profile best as second-round picks.
Yeah, this is my favorite game from kind of a character standpoint. I love the Nate Oates after winning the SEC championship. He said, "We're not a football school or a basketball school. We're a championship school." It was just perfect. It rivaled the Jay Billis. He's not a star. He's a superstar. Despite the accolades, it still feels like the intangibles that Herb Jones do come a little bit underrated, undervalued. He's been at Alabama forever. And he's turned the tide there. I don't buy the shooting. I mean, he shot 7% from three. He was 1 for 14 last year. And this year he's 39% on 51 attempts. Also, probably time to give Javon Quinterly credit. He settled into kind of being this high major rotational player. Does have talent. He's never going to be a pro. That was kind of like the knock once he transferred from Villanova. He couldn't get on the floor because of defense, but he's had double-digit figures every game since February 3rd. He's helped set the table for all those other guys. And just from a game perspective, to give Rick Pitino a week to prepare, and they want to trap and play fast, like, he could totally turn this thing on his head and slow it down, just because that's the type of evil genius I'd say he is.
Yeah. Okay, next up, the South region with Baylor, Hartford, North Carolina, Wisconsin. Fascinating matchup, if that, almost regardless of what ends up happening in the first round here, with North Carolina, Wisconsin winning, because Baylor is all guards and then Wisconsin and North Carolina are both kind of all bigs. I really like North Carolina in that second game. Dayron Sharp, Armando Baycott, Walker Kessler, and Garrison Brooks, plus Caleb Love, Kerwin Walton, also like kind of all six of those guys, interesting prospects. You could sell me on a leaky black take, but I'm not there. Wisconsin is Nate Reavers, Micah Potter. Brad Davison's not an NBA prospect, but that's fine. Baylor, you're talking Davion Mitchell, you're talking Jared Butler. Should we have the Matthew Meyer discussion right now?
It might be a little bit. He could be a candidate to bump his stock.
Yeah, I think people are putting the cart before the horse a little bit.
We've done it. Yeah, I agree.
With Matthew Meyer. I got an email that another draft person put him in the first round, and I think that's irresponsible, just straight up.
That is irresponsible. I'm just disappointed in you. Yeah,
I think it is irresponsible to put Matthew Meyer in the first round. This guy is coming off of 3 points, 3 points, 5 points over the course of his last three games. He had the two breakout Oklahoma State, West Virginia games where he had 18 and 19. The three games before that, 0 points, 2 points, 7 points. He basically has a stretch where he has two straight really good games, and then here, let's see. January 9th through January 23rd. 2 points, 4 points, 0 points, 5 points. What are we doing? Like, no disrespect to Matthew Meyer. I think he is interesting long term. I think he's going to be great next year at Baylor. What in the fuck are we doing?
I had the same reaction, as much as I loved it, to the haircut with the kind of mullet with like the racing stripe thunderbolt inside of his head. That was my initial take too. Like, I love this guy. He's not ready. He's not draft ready. That's okay. Like, we're not being haters. Like, Baylor has a chance to go on a run. He'll be a major piece of that, but he's not going to leapfrog. If he's a first round pick, like, you're leaping probably Butler and maybe Mitchell. Like, I just don't see that. Not right now. Unless he does some crazy run, which stranger things have happened.
In 2021-22, if you told me he is like averaging 15 points a game and does some shit, would not be surprised by any stretch. And I think he has a really good shot to be a great player at Baylor. I think he's going to be awesome at Baylor next year. He is not ready to go pro. Like, just period. Very skilled, very talented, can do a lot of different shit with the ball. Not ready yet, and that's fine. Macy Oteague and Mark Vidal are the two guys kind of beneath the Butler and Mitchell tier. I'll be honest, like, if I was running a team, I would bring Mark Vidal to my G League roster. Like, I would say, you are a priority for us. We aren't going to give you a two-way even. We're going to E10 you, but, like, we're giving you a full E10, and we really want you around next year.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy. I think a couple NBA scouts have echoed that, too, as wild as it may seem, kind of just based on his size and limited what he can do on the perimeter from a shooting perspective. What he does defensively kind of balances all that out.
This Hartford team is led by Tracy Carter, who I have no idea how he is still in college. Started at Marquette in 2016, went to LaSalle, transferred there in 2018, played 2019 there, transferred to Hartford before last season, played Hartford last season, played for Hartford this season. He can be, like, he's almost 25 years old. He's going to be able to go back next year to college. I was going to say,
go back, be 26. Be like one of these hockey players that go to juniors first and go to college. And it's like, hey, you're a freshman. How old are you? I'm 23. Okay, I'm going to go stand over here. This is a good time of year, though, too.
He's the Australian football punter at LSU. Like,
yeah, it's like, you know, Chris Wenke was, whatever, 36 when he was at Florida State. This is a good time of year, though, when those guys pop back up. It's like, oh, yeah, he ended up there. That's crazy.
Okay. The next pod here, Villanova Winthrop and Purdue North Texas. Villanova is the most interesting team here. Jeremiah Robinson Earl, Justin Moore. Do any of the Jermaine Samuels, Caleb Daniels, Cole Swider, Brandon Slater group interest you?
Interest, but don't really pop for kind of the discussion we're having right now. Great guy, solid role playing, but not like let's throw him on the NBA radar. Much more the Jeremiah, where he was a top 30-ish guy, seems to be kind of in that like 40-ish range now. Plays really the Villanova system at 6'9", doesn't try to do anything crazy. The shooting is going to be the swing, which he's only hitting at 28%, but it's a low volume. He's only taking 74 attempts, had three straight double doubles, and then 26-6 in a 1-point loss to Georgetown in that Big East tournament. So that's one that I really want to follow and see what he does without Gillespie out there too.
The other one that I'm fascinated by is Brian Antoine. Do they use him a little bit more over the course of these next two games? Because, or even in the Winthrop game, they have in their last three games since Colin Gillespie got injured, 10 minutes, 22 minutes, 9 minutes for Brian Antoine. Brian Antoine was McDonald's All-American, State Player of the Year in New Jersey, if I remember correctly, right?
Yep. Team Rio. Very, very talented kid.
Yeah. Very talented. He's just dealt with injuries, potential, if he's healthy, potential to be a game breaker. I just don't know what's going on with his body. Justin Moore, I think at some point is like first team all Big East, you know, maybe a draft pick at some point. They play Winthrop, a lot of really smart bettors think Winthrop has a real shot in this game. This is the most important game of Chandler Vodran's career. He's like a 6'7" point guard who can handle the ball and can kind of do a lot of different shit. Occasionally knocks down shots. I'm intrigued. Like, I want to see what he looks like against Villanova. He was not very good when they played high major teams last year, but he was kind of starting like his Division I career at that point. So maybe things will be a little bit different this time around, but he's the guy for Winthrop.
Yeah, 3 triple doubles, nearly had a 4th in the Big South quarterfinals versus Longwood. Does do a little bit of everything for them, sort of inside and out. More like an angles, pump fake type of guy and not beating you with speed, but they're 23-1, and their only loss was by 2 to UNC Asheville. 4 guys in double figures, so a balanced attack there too.
Okay, Purdue in North Texas. Purdue has just a lot of guys I'm really interested in for the future, none for this year. Jaden Ivey would be the top guy for me. Sub 50 true shooting percentage, but just super creative. 6'4", guard, great frame, like looks like an NBA player in the future. Beyond him, Mason Gillis and Brandon Newman, like both wing size potential shooters. Sasha Stefanovic, like 6'5" shooter. Trevion Williams is probably their best player right now, but like 6'10", 270, like post up big. Zach Edey, 7'4", 290 pound, just post up big. Jaden Ivey's the guy though, there long term, that I'm really interested in. He'll get a matchup against Javion Hamlet, Memphis kid. Like, I think kind of interesting. Like, I think he's definitely a G League, Summer League kind of candidate who probably doesn't make the NBA because I don't think he's quite skilled enough as a scorer to do so, and maybe turns it over just a little bit too much. But I'm intrigued by Javion Hamlet enough where he'd be on my radar for the Summer League.
Yeah, I'm intrigued, generally speaking, with Purdue and what they've been able to do and develop with Zach Edey, because they just kind of like shuffle in 7'2" guys. It's like, oh, it's never going to work, and then it works.
No, it's always going to work. Like, if Purdue recruits a guy over 7'1", I just assume they're doing it for a reason. They see something that I don't, and exactly. That it's exactly. Great.
That's yeah, great. I mean, Zach Edey's at IMG Academy, and he commits to Purdue, and I was like, I don't know. Like, if it's going to work, it's going to work in the Big Ten. It's going to work there, and it has. Like,
right.
He was, like, conference player of the week the first week or two of the season. So that coaching staff knows what they're doing.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. Matt Painter does not get enough credit. He's fucking unbelievable. Okay, Texas Tech. Mac McClung, not really an NBA guy for me, but it wouldn't surprise me if he tries to declare. He tried to last year. Terrence Shannon, 6'6" wing, really good defensively, has improved the jump shot over the course of the year. I'm not really a Terrence Shannon guy because I don't love his feel for the game, but there's a lot of tools there that are really interesting. I think he should go back and be like one of the best players in the Big 12 next year, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Kyler Edwards is probably the last guy here that has any NBA interest. 6'4" wing, really, really can shoot the ball. For Utah State, Utah State's going to have, for my money, the best player in this game in Nemeas Kata. One of the best interior defenders in college basketball, totally shuts down the paint. Great rebounder. Has improved as a passer facilitator and has improved as a scorer this year. I think he is a very real draft prospect this year.
Yeah, I was curious about this when we were prepping here because I am worried about a little bit about his lift, his quickness with his post moves. He kind of overpowers people with his enormous size. Yep. In the conference, and he has 15 points, 10 rebounds, 3.2 blocks a game, which is incredible. Was an honorable mention, All-American, but just like as that big kind of older school five, I take a little bit of pause and where he fits. Terrence Shannon back in the starting lineup, had some time as a sixth man for a while, responded, especially in the scoring department. He had 18 points, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, and a 1-point loss at Big 12 tournament against Texas. Tools is the word. He has all the athletic tools at 6'6", really solid frame. Want him to keep slashing, mixing in threes once in a while. Could be a late first, early second name. I don't know if he falls there, but I would think he maybe at least dips his toes in and tests the water.
The 314 here is Arkansas Colgate. Moses Moody is, you know, obviously the guy for Arkansas. We've talked a lot about Moody this year. Go back to the many podcasts where we've talked about Moses Moody. Just a super high level scoring 3-and-D, probably 1-and-done. He'll be a lottery pick in all likelihood. Anyone else on Arkansas really interest you? Like, maybe you could sell me on Jalen Tate and Justin Smith. Jalen Tate, really good defender. Justin Smith, super athlete. probably Summer League guys, but not much more.
Yeah, I don't know how much more of the sell. This one is the NBA storyline here is like how high can Moody crawl up draft boards? Can he get all the way up to six with some people depending on how the lottery balls kind of fall?
Yeah, Colgate is Jordan Burns is a point guard. He's a really good scorer, good shooter, kind of does everything there, distributes as well. Look, this one's all about like Matt Langle. The fact that Colgate is as good as it is, this is another guy where like I am blown away that he's not really being discussed as someone who should be hired. Colgate's a fucking impossible job, and they've been really exceptionally good for the last 4 years.
Yeah, they've recruited well. He's coached well. He's in the mix for a couple Atlantic 10 jobs. He'll continue to be there kind of for the Northeast stuff as we move on.
Yeah, like the St. Joe's thing is not working out. St. Joe's should have just hired him over Billy Lang.
Yeah, he's there. Yeah, right there.
I don't know what they were doing. Period. Florida against Virginia Tech, and then Ohio State. Oral Roberts is this little pod here. Florida is Trey Mann and Scotty Lewis are the two big names here. I've heard of some people who like Omar Payne long term. Noah Locke can knock down shots at 6'3". Colin Castleton is like this 6'11" kind of interior player. But this is all Trey Mann. I think Trey Mann is like a top 20 prospect in this class. 6'5", just absolutely ridiculous ability to separate and get his shot right now. And then Scotty Lewis is just a guy that has not panned out as an offensive player enough. He's a really good defender, but long way to go offensively, and I think he should go back to Florida. Virginia Tech on the other side. I'm going to give you the floor on Virginia Tech. Give me your Aluma love.
My Keve Aluma love? Yeah.
Yes.
We've covered this. I'm a story guy. So he grew up a soccer player, didn't play basketball until high school. He averaged 2.5 points per game as a freshman at Wofford. And now he's second team all ACC. I'm just intrigued. He moves well at 6'9" plus, can hit from three when left open, has a high release. He's athletic, has pretty good footwork. He'll jump stop on the move. Not entirely mechanical, but you can tell like it's just kind of like a repetitions thing. Some more on his post moves. Has some instincts in the glass to know where the ball is going. Pretty soft hands, has some patience. Probably not this year guy because he's still putting all the pieces together, but has shown enough to pique my interest as a possible 22 draft pick.
Do totally agree with that. He's the guy at Virginia Tech that really interests me. I don't know that I really want to go into anyone else at this point there. Ohio State.
You have the floor for this one. I wrote this down, and my first line is, I'm going to let you start here because this one feels like your wheelhouse. I've got more angry Ohio State texts from you than probably others, so have the floor.
Yeah, EJ Liddell is their best prospect to me. Probably one of the six or seven best players in the Big Ten this year. I'd say six best players in the Big Ten. Gets to the line, but he's like a 6'7". I mean, like they've played him at center a lot. Like next to Seth Towns without Kyle Young in the lineup. So like, I don't really know what to do with EJ Liddell. Probably needs to get into just like slightly better shape, but I think
he has gotten better though.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's going to probably be an NBA player at some point if he does that. I do think he's going to shoot it. I think that as long as he continues down that road, the other guy I kind of like here, like I know that some people like Dwayne Washington and I can't really get there as an NBA player because I don't think he makes great decisions. But I kind of sneaky like Justice Suing a lot.
I don't hate that.
Yeah, 6'7" wing, 37% from threes, 60% true shooting percentage. Turns it over a little bit too much. I'm intrigued by him quite a bit. I also like, it's funny, like I like a lot of these guys. Like I like Zed Key long term as like an interesting maybe upside play. Justin Ahrens can shoot the ever-loving fuck out of the ball. Like, Eugene Brown is like a 6'6" wing guy. Like, you could sell me Michi Johnson's interesting. Like, it's a lot of guys where they just do a great job of finding who they're looking for.
Right.
And just nail it and, like, put them in the absolute peak position to succeed.
Yeah, I really like Liddell. He's more than double his points, so 16 a game this year. Ohio State uses him well. Offensively, kind of like the anchor for what they do to run their sets. Dwayne Washington, I mean, he had 32 in that game against Illinois. I was curious kind of where you had him as a draft guy on your board, but not a guy for right now.
I think Oral Roberts is going to have the best player in this game, though.
Ooh, that's not a hot, not super hot take, but I like it.
Yeah. Max Abmas is a 6'1" guard who pulls up from all over the court. Like, it's absolutely nothing. Took 203 point attempts this year, hit 43% of them, 90% from the line, 63.6 true shooting percentage. Like, just an absolute scoring machine who can also pass. Like, he's a really good playmaker out of pick and roll. Look, like, I'm not telling him that he needs to leave Oral Roberts by all means. Like, I don't mean to
don't do this. Yeah.
Try to steal Paul Mills's like best player or anything, but like, I'll tell you this, I'd be fascinated to see him in a high major.
Yeah, so you may as well saying it. So yeah, Abmas, leading scorer in the NCAA, like number one, 24.2 points per game. And the 3-point thing's crazy because he's taken 208 of them and he's hit 90. He's had 13 games with four or more made threes. And he loves driving to the paint. He can lean in with his left shoulder, finishes with his right. He gets paint touches at will when he drives and knows how to maneuver with those little fades and spins too. He's wired to score.
I think he's so good. I think he is so good. I love him. And they also have Kevin Obinor, who is their 6'8 kind of pick and pop guy that they play with him, who also hit 46% of his threes this year and like 24% defensive rebounding rate. Like, if Ohio State doesn't have Kyle Young in this game, I think they have some real problems defending this pick and roll.
Yeah,
and no, it's going to be fun.
He's effective trailing that break or making plays from the top of the key out
of O'Banner, you're right.
Pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. He feasts on those slower footed defenders and switches, averages 18-9, along with 50% from the field, 47 from three, 88 from the free throw line. So has a nice touch, and I am excited to watch him and EJ Liddell go at it.
Okay. Last region.
Last one. Thanks for sticking around.
Illinois Drexel, Loyola Chicago, Georgia Tech. Illinois, Iota Sunmu, Kofi Coburn, Adam Miller long-term, Andre Curbelo probably long-term, I would say, but like, if Curbelo went off in this NCAA tournament, is he a Malachi guy?
I mean, he could be. I think he is what he is. I don't mean that as a knock. Like, the negative for Curbelo is always going to be his size, and that's not really changing. I mean, he's a magician with the basketball, and he's kind of been like the catalyst to this late run here, but I hope he goes back to school.
The sneaky problem with Curbelo is he can't really shoot from three yet either. If that improves, I think he's like a very interesting prospect, but he needs to improve from three. Trent Frazier, I'm not really like a Trent Frazier guy, but 37% from three and really defends well. I think he's going to have a great career in Europe. I wouldn't hate it if a team said, like, give you the full E10 and we want you on our G League team and we might call you up midway through the year next year, but I don't really think so. Drexel, I haven't watched enough Drexel. I'm just going to be honest. I haven't seen enough of them this year.
Yeah, I also don't want to give up on Adam Miller yet either. I mean, I know the numbers aren't there right here and right now, but as a long-term
totally.
Guy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Adam Miller is like a real long-term interesting prospect. He's just not a 2021 prospect. Might be a 2022 like first-round pick, but not there yet. Loyola Chicago and Georgia Tech has by far the most interesting like contrast like specific player matchup of any game in this entire first round, because Cam Krutwig is like this old balding passing like 260 pound center who is like the college basketball like Nikola Jokic, and then Moses Wright for Georgia Tech tries to dunk every single ball caught.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, the most important storyline here is that 101-year-old Chaplin's sister Jean was cleared to travel. Did you see that? She hasn't been to a game all year, but has both doses of the COVID vaccine. She's there.
This is a sister Jean free podcast.
Okay. We'll edit that out, but
we'll edit it in post.
Yeah, exactly. So you have Georgia Tech. They're coming off an AC championship. Then you have this battle of the bigs with Cameron Courtwick's an All-American. Moses Wright is ACC Player of the Year. Just a complete contrasting styles. Cameron Courtwick, he likes a more pace game in the half court. 6'9 lefty. can hit jumpers from the elbows. Pace is a good word. I like him in dribble handoffs and side pick and rolls. Yeah. Finishes well around the basket. Purse energy is actually the 94th percentile in pick and roll man scoring. And they're very good. And they have a very good coach in Porter Mosier. They're ranked 9th on KenPom. They're number 1 in adjusted defensive efficiency. And then Georgia Tech wants to push and have Jose Alvarado kind of pressure and get 5 steals a game. So it'll be, like you said, a very contrasting stylistic watch.
I am so excited to see Cam Krutwig here in the NBL next year. It's going to be great.
Yeah, he'll be your first interview for the year.
Mike DeVoe, interesting prospect. Jose Alvarado, like, great player, great story. Really good defender. Has improved his overall efficiency as a scorer this year. If they would beat Illinois and make the Sweet 16, and by the way, the Moses Wright Kofi Coburn matchup and the Alvarado DeVoe matchup, like the against Iota Sumu and like their backcourt, like I am fascinated by a potential Georgia Tech and Illinois matchup. I like this Georgia Tech team a lot. I'm very intrigued to see this Georgia Tech team play in the tournament.
Yeah, I have to. DeVoe double figures in his last 9 games, had 20 in the AC championship game. They're putting the pieces together, obviously. Early in the year, Josh Patterson said something like, I think every team in the conference should make the tournament, and people look down and he's crazy, and then he goes out and wins it, albeit in a COVID-filled escape tournament also, but they did win, so here we are.
Okay. Tennessee, Oregon State, Oklahoma State, Liberty. Oklahoma State is obviously Cade Cunningham. I don't really think they have too many other interesting prospects. I'm not really an ice likely guy. Maybe you could sell me on Caleb Boone in 2 years once he gets up to like 240 pounds. Liberty does not also really have anyone that I'm interested in. I'm also just not a Liberty guy. No, don't need to dive deep into the quagmire that is Liberty. right. Tennessee has Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer. If Oklahoma State and Tennessee get through both of their games, sets up the prospect matchup of the first two rounds in the NCAA tournament, where we'll get Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer against Cade Cunningham.
Which would be awesome. And we can't have nice things, so it never pans out. I'm really hoping
right?
Does. Yeah, it's like, there it is, just win a game. It's like, no, it's not. People are even looking at like USC, like, oh, well, if they win like a couple, then they could play Oregon or Iowa down the road. It's like, that's so far away. But this is just one game each. I have one kind of topical question. You had an interview with Cade Cunningham. Was it yesterday on The Athletic?
Went live today. I talked to Cade yesterday.
Yeah, very good. Very in-depth. As a number one pick in the draft, can you trust him when he said his favorite food is spaghetti?
Yeah, it was funny. He like, really...
It's like, what's spaghetti? Like, what, in a turkey sandwich? Like, I just thought that was... I was off put by that.
It was like a deep pause. Like, he like really racked his brain for a minute. Like, I'll say that. It was not a immediate response from Cade. But okay. Yeah, spaghetti. You know, some people have like really good family spaghetti recipes.
That's very, very fair. But maybe a piece of chicken on the side, I don't know.
Yeah. For Oregon State, the guy I'm probably most interested in is Warith Alatiche, their big transfer from Nicholls State last year, kind of 6'7", 200 pounds, senior next year, kind of young for the class, if I remember correctly. If he could ever shoot, I'm intrigued. Like 6'7", really good defender, athletic, kind of does a lot.
Yeah. I think you nailed it there. And they won some games, obviously, in that Pac-12 tournament and surprised some people, but they had a good year. They're 17-12.
Okay. Our second to last little pod here. San Diego State, Syracuse, West Virginia, Morehead State. San Diego State, Syracuse is interesting because San Diego State has Matt Mitchell and Jordan Shackle. Mitchell is like a top 70 guy for me. Jordan Shackle has a shot to get on the list at the end of the year after guys return to school. Syracuse has Quincy Guerrier, Alan Griffin, Kadari Richmond. I mean, are we at the point where we have to throw Buddy Boeheim into this conversation?
Don't have to if you don't want to. You're a show.
I think he scores a lot. Yeah. He's the fourth guy, though, yes, among that group for sure. But the interesting thing is that Guerrier, Alan Griffin are probably going to be the guys that match up specifically against Matt Mitchell and Jordan Shackle. So that has potential to be like kind of an underrated fun prospect matchup on the wing that actually could tell evaluators like quite a bit about where those guys are as prospects.
Yeah, Guerrier too. Like he's probably their best all around player, but I know you drive the Kadari Train fan club pretty intently too.
Yeah, I mean, Kadari is their best prospect by far. Ridiculous defender in their zone, drives all of the action. I will be fascinated to see what they do with their with essentially just what their lineup choices are, because I think he needs to play, but we'll see. West Virginia is Deuce McBride and I guess Jarrett Culver, but I don't know that I need to throw Jarrett Culver into that, you know, kind of mix just because he still can't really finish inside well enough, and yeah, just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, that's I think that's fair. Where are you kind of at with Deuce McBride right now?
I mean, really
higher on your board than most, right?
Yeah, really good shooter, really good decision maker with the ball in his hands. Maybe takes a few too many bad shots, but when he decides to pass, like he makes plays well. Draws fouls like inside, just kind of does like a little bit of everything, and he's a pretty good defender as well. You know, backup point guard, that kind of is exactly what you're looking for, I feel like.
Yeah. Does he go back to school? Does he test? What are we kind of feeling out here?
I don't know. I don't know what his I don't know what his desires are. Like I'm not going to sit here and like guess on that front, but I think he'd certainly get a lot of NBA interest if he decides to declare.
Yeah, definitely the defense too.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Morehead State. I have only watched the Morehead State Belmont game. Their best player for me was the Broom kid, who's like 6'10", and he's just like kind of a big.
Yeah, you know more than me there.
Okay. Last thing. Clemson, Rutgers, Houston, Cleveland State. I just got a shout out Amir Sims, man. We're all about.
He leads them in like every statistical category, I think.
Oh yeah, it's great. And then yesterday, Amir Sims, someone asked him like what he thinks of the bubble, and he goes, "I'm a homebody, so any environment outside of my bedroom is uncomfortable to me." And
it's like, dude, you've been there for 4 days. Like, I've been there for like 3 weeks. I totally get it. Like, you're on the road, you want your own bed. Totally understand. But you got to just get used to the Marriott, I guess, whatever you're doing.
No, I've never felt more seen than when Amir Sims.
Who's going to make it your own? It's like the NBA bubble. Like, bring an egg crate, bring a weighted blanket. Like, you can spice it up a little bit.
There are dozens of us. There are dozens of us, Matt Penny. All right. Amir Sims is the guy there. He's really the only interesting prospect on Clemson, in my opinion. Rutgers is Ron Baker or Ron Harper Jr. Good Lord. Geo Baker got combined with Ron Harper there in my brain for a second. Ron Harper just hasn't quite gotten up to the level that I was hoping. Do you have any interest in Miles Johnson?
I do a little bit. Yeah.
He's
like averaging 8 points at rebounds, like 2.5 blocks a game at 6'11". He's a redshirt junior. Could be another name for 2022. I'm very anti drafting bigs, but I see like what he could do as an NBA five.
Yeah. Okay. Last team here, Houston and Cleveland State. Cleveland State does not really have anyone. Torrey Patton, I believe, is their best player, just kind of like a normal collegiate wing, like power wing kind of guy. Houston, Quentin Grimes, Dejon Giroux, Tremont Mark, all of whom are kind of interesting to me. You might even be able to sell me on like Justin Gorham as like kind of a super tough dude who does a lot of shit. But yeah, I think that it's mostly Grimes, Giroux, and maybe long-term Mark if he can figure out how to shoot.
Yeah, and what a bounce back from Quentin Grimes. We talked about it maybe two pods ago or something, but he transferred and has become this All-American candidate and actually improved his game. His shot looks quicker. He's playing with more confidence and has kind of like panned out, really. Like, if you told him when he was in high school that this is what his career is going to be and didn't tell him what college was, he would say, like, yeah, that's exactly what I want. And Houston is like this sneaky extra high major school in this tournament that was 24-3. Like, that they don't get a lot of love when we talk about the top three or four teams in the country either.
Your favorite first round matchup of prospects?
It's got to be Bones, right? Like, it's got to be. I love VCU and Oregon. That's probably my for prospects, that's my favorite first round matchup.
Yeah, Bones Duarte is also mine. I could not be more excited. Favorite second round has got to be Tennessee and Oklahoma, right? Oklahoma State.
Yeah, no question.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Matt Penny, we went much longer than I wanted to because, of course, we did. Have you watched anything interesting before we get out of here?
Interesting. This is March, so I've it's a trademark. This is actually the month of March, so I watched Top Class on but that was on Sierra Canyon's high school season with BJ Boston and Zaire Williams, and then I just started Last Chance U with basketball, JUCO basketball. So I'm one episode into that. I'm all basketball in March.
So yesterday I took like 3 hours off. Basically, I watched this movie called Assassins. It's this documentary about these two, like 20 something year old women who I'm like trying to describe it without giving away too much.
You say this about every movie. Like, I don't want to say, it's a horror movie. It's like, I don't know where you find these things.
So this one is a documentary and it is about these two women that essentially like killed Kim Jong-nam, who is Kim Jong-un's brother.
Was that, I don't want to give it away, but was that the, they thought they were on like a reality show type thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's about that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm interested. I read the Rolling Stone article when it came out. Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, was one of the most like wild documentaries I've seen in a while. Like very basic, like by the book documentary, but just fucking nuts story. Then after that, I watched Grand Isle with Nicolas Cage and Kelsey Grammer doing Southern Louisiana accents.
if Nicolas Cage doesn't have his hair blowing in the wind like Con Air, I don't want to watch it.
Oh no, he does.
Oh, perfect. I'm in.
This is it. It's one of the worst movies I've seen in a long time. It is absolutely terrible.
It was so bad I choked. Yeah.
Every conceivable way. It was so bad. Not even like enjoyable bad. Just holy shit, what am I watching bad?
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
All right, Penny, tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what you want to tell them before that we get into this NCAA tournament deal.
What does that mean? I
don't know. Like, what do you got? Like, something. Give us something exciting. I don't know. Just tell them where to find your work, too.
Something exciting. I'm on Twitter, Matt_Penny. I was quickly posting an Isaiah Jackson video before we came on the air here. I'm excited for a ton of games. And let's knock on wood that it happens. We've been fairly safe here thus far. And guys are getting their fresh air time. And we'll be in the gyms shortly.
Okay. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. I've had like a million articles go up. I've done NBA Trade Big Board. I've done Mock Draft. I've done Cade Cunningham interview. I did Best Bets, my favorite first round picks for this upcoming first round. Go read all of that work, subscribe, everything like that. We have a really great special on right now. We also have a really great special with BetMGM, so take advantage of that. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.